Welcome to the Maze Marketing Podcast. This isn't another podcast about marketing tricks or hacks, but about building effective marketing systems, beating marketing overwhelm, and communicating your expertise with your hosts, Rob Drummond and Jonathan Wilson.
Hey, two quick things before we get started. The first is that if this is your first time listening to the Maze Marketing Podcast, you're going to want to make sure that you're subscribed to our email list. Email subscribers get new articles free when we publish them, and we'll also notify you when new podcast episodes are available. We've been on a bit of a break during the COVID-19 lockdown, but we've got some great guests coming up, so make sure you're subscribed at www.mazemarketingpodcast.com/hello. The second thing is that if you find this episode helpful, please go ahead and leave us a 5-star rating and review in your favourite podcast app. The main two are Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. The rating and reviews really help to support this podcast and validate that this is a great source of remarketing information. So go ahead and leave that review. It really does help out the show. In today's episode, we're talking to AJ Wilcox. I was introduced to AJ recently as a LinkedIn ads expert and was really blown away by the depth of his knowledge and his generosity with his knowledge. And I was really delighted that he agreed to come on the show. My audio on this episode is a little bit echoey. When we recorded this, I was partway through a house move, so I was recording it in an empty house with no furniture. But I think it's, you know, fine to follow along with. So having said all that, let's go ahead and jump into the conversation. I think it would be fair to say that when LinkedIn ads first appeared on the scene, they left a little bit to be desired. You had these kind of 3 sidebar ads. They were ridiculously expensive. And actually, a lot of these assumptions have kind of stuck. So when I talk to people about LinkedIn ads, they say, does it really work? Isn't it expensive? And that increasingly, in my opinion, in my experience, isn't quite the case. It seems to me that LinkedIn have really put a lot of effort into fixing their dysfunctional ad platform recently. So I'm really happy today that we've got AJ Wilcox on. So AJ is a dedicated LinkedIn ads manager, founder of a company called B2Linked. So AJ, I'm really happy that you're able to join us and tell our listeners about LinkedIn ads.
Well, Rob and Jonathan, I'm super excited to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Great. Can you maybe start by just telling us a little bit about your background and how you got into managing LinkedIn ads?
Yes, I started life as an SEO guy and you know really loved the search side of things. And I didn't stumble onto LinkedIn ads until about 9 years ago. I was working, I just started a brand new job with a new CMO at a new company. And I'm talking to her on the very first day. I'm laying out all of my different digital marketing strategies. And I remember her saying, okay, all that sounds great. Go ahead and execute it. But just so you know, we started a pilot with LinkedIn ads about 2 weeks ago. So see what you can do. And I saluted, new boss, new CMO. I didn't want to look like an idiot. And so I saluted and said, yes, ma'am, absolutely. And then I walked out of her office and went, what is a LinkedIn ads?
isn't that expensive? Like
exactly. I mean, I really knew nothing about it. I was a search guy. Heavy in SEO, heavy in AdWords at the time. And I was like, okay, well, I'll see what I can do. And then about 2 weeks later, I was just messing around. And one of my sales guys came to me and said, hey, AJ, we don't know what you're doing over here, but like, we're fighting over your leads. Whatever you're doing, keep it up. And I went,
what year was this in?
This was in 2011.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. And
that must have been the really early days of LinkedIn ads.
Yeah, it was really early. I mean, the only ad format we had was text ads. Pretty early days. But this, I go and look in the CRM to see, you know, what are the leads that the sales rep's talking about? And every single one was sourced from LinkedIn ads, and it was not the only channel I was running. So I kind of got this inkling like, wow, maybe there's something of more value here. So I continued just growing and expanding that until I grew it to become LinkedIn's largest spending account worldwide. And after running that for 2.5 years, I went, okay, there's got to be more companies than just this one that LinkedIn ads would slay for. And so I figured an ad agency was the best model to share that experience with as many different companies as possible.
Great.
Totally.
So what's changed since, so that was in 2011.
Yeah.
So
Where did you go after that?
So in 2014, LinkedIn released a new ad type called sponsored content. And I mean, even still to this day, sponsored content is what we run for 95% of our clients. Mm. It's the de facto ad format. So that's really cool.
So sponsored content, so that would be similar to like a Facebook ad where the ad appears in the news feed.
Exactly. Yep. And that's because in 2013, LinkedIn chose the people that they called influencers, who were like the business celebrities, the Richard Bransons and Bill Gates, to be able to post articles on the site. And that's when they came out with the news feed so everyone could start sharing in 2014. So yeah, anything that shows up in the news feed, they call sponsored content. And there's, you know, there's image only, or not only, but like a static image one, then that's the majority of what we recommend. But there's also video, there's carousel, and there's the, you know, what you guys would know as lead ads, what LinkedIn calls lead generation formats.
Yeah. So a lead ad would be where someone fills in a form that's hosted by LinkedIn and it pre-populates their details.
Exactly. And you can skip having to go to a landing page and waiting for it to load and wondering if you're going to trust the company or not.
I've sort of seen reasonable results with them. And I think it's because people are more likely to have their business email address on LinkedIn than they might be on Facebook.
I think they're probably more likely, but it's still not super common. The vast majority of the emails that you'll get from the lead ads are still going to be personal emails, but I don't care. In fact, I really like getting personal emails because, as you guys know, those are going to have the highest match rate everywhere else we go. So when we upload them as a Facebook custom audience into Google, into Twitter, into everywhere, that email address is going to be easier for us to stay in front of them and nurture.
Yeah, I feel like we've all been in situations where someone has opted in on like a Yahoo address or a Gmail address, and then when they eventually buy, they finally use their corporate email.
Yeah.
And that's quite an obvious progression, because when you've just found someone on social media, it's like, you obviously got to use your Gmail. that's what your Gmail address is for, is to protect you from
unwanted stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, that I have to establish that trust first. I'd like to explore the sort of similarities or not between, so I run a reasonable number of, kind of newsfeed ads on Facebook, and a lot of the friends that I know, especially copywriter friends, swear by running kind of long copy ads where you're almost taking someone through like a complete story. Does that kind of stack up on Facebook? I mean, I'm wondering where the similarities are and where they aren't.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. Most of the time, your LinkedIn and Facebook are going to be very similar in what works and what doesn't. But this is one area where they depart pretty suddenly. On Facebook, people will spend, I think the last stat is like 34 minutes per day on it. And they spend something like 17 minutes per week on LinkedIn. And so it's significantly less time, and these are busier people. So we find if we can front load our message, we keep it short and sweet, and then push the value and the pain point as early as possible in our ad. You know, we can take 600 characters, but we've only ever found 3 cases where longer copy outperformed shorter. So we like keep it under like 130. And
wow.
Yeah.
I guess they're not on LinkedIn to kind of goof off, are they? They're on LinkedIn to connect with people, build connections, look for jobs, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yet they're usually on a mission. They're not there necessarily to consume or be entertained like they might be on Facebook.
Yeah. Mm. How about video? Because like, I don't see many people running video ads on LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's probably for good reason. video ads on LinkedIn are insanely expensive. Right. It's like 15 to 25 cents per 2 second view. So on Facebook, it's a 3 second or a 10 second view. Facebook, you might pay, you know, 1 to 2 cents for it. And LinkedIn, it's, you know, 15 to 20 or 25 or maybe even up to 30. But we just had something really cool happen. About 3 weeks ago, LinkedIn released engagement retargeting. And I've always been jealous of Facebook and YouTube advertisers who could do like, once you've watched 50% of my video, now I want to show you the next one in the sequence. We can now do that on LinkedIn ads. Hooray!
Great. So I know that Jonathan is itching to jump in and explain what engagement retargeting is. So.
Yeah. So well, before I explain it, AJ, are you familiar with Kurt Malley at all, the Facebook guy, the belt method?
No, I'm not.
Yeah. So look it up sometime. So I've been talking with him over the past couple of weeks. He does exactly that. And funny enough, what he uses for the top of funnel is podcast recording. So he's running, believe it or not, full length podcasts, right? 30, 40, 50 minutes. To a totally cold audience who's never seen anything before. And it sounds crazy, right? But like, it's working for him. I heard him give a bunch of numbers. He's cutting lead costs in like a quarter doing this. And then, but that's exactly what he's doing. So running these big ads or videos as an ad and then building engagement audiences. And as he says, would you rather pay like, you know, let's say you're in a high-end B2B or some, you know, a little bit more difficult situation. You're trying to get webinar registration for whatever. Would you rather pay $50 for a webinar registration or $5 for like a 30-minute, you know, even if it's half of it, right? Like a 30-minute engagement on a video, because if somebody just sat there and soaked up 30 minutes of you or whatever you're talking about, they're like, totally pre-sold and everything, and it's almost as good as watching a webinar, right? And like, it didn't cost hardly anything compared to that. And then of course that's the top, so you build an audience of people who watch that 50%, 75%, 95% of an hour-long video, and that's a very engaged, committed person already, and you can throw your middle of funnel at them then and get really good results fast.
Oh, that's so cool to me, because you're going to pay the same amount whether they watch for 2 seconds or whether they watch for a half hour. So, man, give them the half hour content. Let them know, like, and trust you. I love it.
Yeah. You got to try that. I'm going to give it a shot, but you got to try that on LinkedIn and see if it goes the same way.
Absolutely. Now I got to figure out, okay, so I do have a podcast. Anyone who wants to listen to the LinkedIn ads show, check that one out. But I wonder what visual component I could put with it. I don't know if you just like show the waveform or something of the audio, but I seriously want to try that out. That would be so cool.
Yeah.
For everyone who's listening, AJ is walking on his treadmill desk. It's kind of hypnotic. So you should probably just put that in the video. There's something like, I can't help but watch it.
I've heard there's a whole bunch of people in Japan who will pay to watch people sleep. Maybe I'll just record myself walking on a treadmill desk. Just
there you go.
AJ's big ginger face.
Yeah, there you go. You're in Utah, right? Get out there on the Bonneville Flats and do some B-roll of some race cars or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the car scene out here is great.
So we can do engagement remarketing on LinkedIn. I have to admit, I've not really touched this yet, but I think it's definitely, you know, in terms of the context of what we teach, like multi-channel retargeting, I think the retargeting on LinkedIn for me has always been frustratingly limited in that, you know, you're kind of stuck at 30-day audiences. We kind of teach people to create much shorter audience durations and kind of sequence the ads that people see over time. Are you using this with many clients at the moment?
We're not. And the engagement retargeting, yes, I think it's really cool. The other piece with engagement retargeting that we got besides video, we can also retarget form openers and form submitters on the lead gen formats.
Oh, wow.
So that was the new thing we got that was really cool. And I've been waiting for this for so long, specifically because the retargeting on LinkedIn has been crazy weak. I mean, since it came out in 2017, not only like you mentioned where you're limited to the audience sizes you can build, but you look at it and first of all, LinkedIn's not the network that people spend a ton of time on. So there's not a whole lot of value in staying in front of people there. There's so much more value on Facebook and Google. But then you look at it and go, okay, this is entirely cookie-based, which means half of the browsers out there are going to be iOS, Safari, Mozilla that don't even accept a cookie. So if I have to pay LinkedIn $8 to $11 for every person I send to a landing page, and I have to have at least 300 people in an audience to even start advertising, it means I've got to send like 600 people to that website before I have an audience that's big enough to retarget. And then, you know, the whole thing evaporates after 180 days. Used to be 90 days. They've extended that, thank goodness. But I just look at the retargeting prospects on LinkedIn and go, you know, it's not even all that inexpensive. Like, you'll still pay $4+ per click. So mm-hmm. I would much rather have LinkedIn be the original network. They're the ones that you send the right traffic to your website, and yep. then have Google and Facebook retarget them all across the GDN, all the way across Facebook and Instagram. I think that's the ticket.
Yeah.
So, so you're using LinkedIn to kind of hone in on your ideal customer, because the targeting options are, I think actually really good. I mean, are you mostly working with B2B clients?
Yeah, I'd say it's probably 90% B2B. And then the other 10% might be a small mix of like financial services, but maybe mostly recruiting.
Hmm.
Yeah. And for our clients, obviously the targeting is the reason why they come to us. Like
yeah.
LinkedIn ads, it's the reason why we're willing to pay $8 to $11 per click, is we can narrow in on people by, you know, job title, their seniority, what department, the skills in their profile, even... I know we can't do this on Facebook. We can target whole groups. So if you're a member of a social media marketing group, I can target that group by name and target everyone who's inside. We can do company name, company size, company industry. And that's probably only about a fifth of everything that's available. It's incredible. And you know, the biggest reason to want to use LinkedIn is if you are, let's say you're using Google and people are coming to you with intent, but they can't afford what you do. Your sales team is saying, we're talking to tire kickers and mom and pops all the time. And they get really tired of those people who just can't afford them. With LinkedIn, you can make sure every single lead is someone from the right company size and the right role to be able to afford you. They're just gonna be more mid-funnel, and you've got to nurture that conversation until they're ready to, you know, actually engage in a sales conversation, but they'll be talking to exactly the right people.
Yeah, because if you're using like Google Display or something to try and make that first contact, I mean, the best that you might hope to do is use like an in-market audience of people looking for like enterprise software or something. And it's still this huge audience, and it's the opposite of focused, and you can't guarantee like what company size, what verticals they are. So I guess the takeaway is like, if you've got a really clear idea of like who it is that you want to reach for this, then it's a really obvious starting point.
Oh yeah. And then I also think that if you've got a lifetime value of when you close a customer, they're worth more than $15,000, then yeah, I mean, I know LinkedIn's expensive, but it's going to work out on the back end. You're going to have the return on investment you're looking for.
Yeah.
But if your lifetime value is too much less than that, then yeah, you might have to be concerned about LinkedIn being too expensive.
Yeah. You are literally the third LinkedIn expert that's quoted that exact price, $15,000 LTV. Where did that number come from? Now you just got me curious, because you're the third that said exactly that, 15K.
I'm the original source of that.
You are the source.
I'm really, really hopeful that the other people, it's because they were quoting me on it.
Yeah, maybe so. That's funny. Did you, I mean, is that like you ran an average or any data behind that or something specific?
Yeah. I mean, we've been in business almost 6 years now. Mm-hmm. And from the very beginning, we got all kinds of data about cost per click and click-through rate. And then we started to get a lot of conversion data over time. And, mm-hmm. but it's always been difficult for clients to open up their CRM to us. So yeah. We would only see what they would allow us to see in our reporting. Yeah. And as we've gained more and more clients, bigger data sets, then we start to look at, okay, what does conversion rate look like to MQL and SQL and proposal and close? So it's taken quite a while to get enough data before I can really say like, yeah, here's lifetime value that makes sense. We found that the average of our customers spends about $1,000 to $4,000 in LinkedIn ads to close a deal. And so we mm-hmm. go, man, if you're gonna make 15K off a deal and it costs you $1,000 to $4,000 to close, there's plenty of room for a sales commission, plenty of room for an agency, yep. and still have a great return.
Yeah.
Great. What sorts of offers are you seeing that work in your LinkedIn ads? I mean, what sort of things are people responding to?
Rob, that is the crucial question for LinkedIn. And I think it's probably similar for Facebook, but because the costs are so much lower on Facebook and the technology is quite frankly a lot better, advertisers can cheat a little bit. But on LinkedIn, when you're paying $8 to $11 a click, you can do very low friction offers like come and read this blog post. And, you know, blog posts don't have a high conversion rate. So you're going to see this like insane cost per conversion. And if you go way to the other side, like click here to talk to a sales rep or buy something or take a trial or a demo of something.
Some kind of scary offer.
Exactly. Yeah. You're asking too much too soon. Yeah. And people may click, but it'll be at a low rate. So you'll get charged a ton for each click. And then they'll only convert at like 1.5% to 4%. And so we want to avoid the extremes with LinkedIn ads and go right for gated content offers, some kind of lead magnet that ideally provides a lot of value. And in exchange, you're only asking for, you know, first name, last name, email. And so some of the best guides and, you know, types of content we've seen would be like checklists and cheat sheets and guides, ebooks, free in-person events work well, and webinars surprisingly continue to perform well.
Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, obviously, like the free report has kind of been bashed quite a lot, but I think when done right and when positioned correctly, and I think fundamentally, when it solves a problem that these people are actually experiencing, because that's the missing piece. It's not that free reports don't work; it's that poor free reports don't work.
Yes.
Well, it's not that webinars don't work. It's like people will watch a webinar if it actually helps them solve a problem that they have right now. But you've got to understand what that problem that they have right now actually is.
Yes. And you've so
maybe
got
to, you have to go back a few steps. It's not whether we do a webinar or whether we do a free report. It's like, well, what problem can we help them solve? What bleeding that problem can we help them solve?
Yes. What's keeping them up at night? What are they ultra curious about? One of the funniest ones that I ever ran, we had a piece that was talking about programmatic advertising. And I was targeting all kinds of marketing decision makers. And for some reason, our VPs of marketing and our CMOs were downloading this piece of content like crazy. And we just kept wondering, like, what in the world? Why is this so interesting to the very senior marketers at large companies? And eventually we figured it out, went, oh, interesting. These are all guys who are being asked about like, hey, how does programmatic advertising play into your strategy? And they're like, I don't know what that word means. I better come up with an answer. So we were playing to their curiosities, but sometimes pain points work really well too. So yeah, I think Rob, exactly what you just said, it's finding out what is going to be really valuable for them and then give them whatever that content is. If it's a one-page checklist or a 60-minute webinar or something in between, whatever you offer them that's going to solve it is going to be the right format.
Yeah. And it's almost like, okay, so you've kind of identified the problem. And so something that I kind of picked up from Travis Saga recently was that basically any copywriter can write about the problem, but actually it's drilling down to symptoms of the problem that takes real insights. So not particularly a B2B example, but a major problem in my life at the moment is that I don't currently own a motorbike. So like any copywriter could come along and say, hey, you don't own a motorbike. Whereas actually the symptom of that is I look wistfully at every motorbike that passes. I gaze at the alloys, and you know, you could name that symptom. You could call it like bike envy. And actually, if you then created a lead magnet about solving bike envy, like perhaps that's going to be even more effective.
Oh, absolutely. As someone who's got a Yamaha R6, I totally feel you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Despite not having a license to drive it, it sees my neighborhood a good bit.
Yeah, there we go. So if you're running, say, lead ads on LinkedIn, and people are obviously, some portion of people are going to go to the lead ad or not fill in the lead form and register for the bike envy PDF or whatever it is. Some people are not. What are you then promoting and retargeting of? Are you reiterating the same offer? Are you changing the offer?
Yeah, we find that an offer can live pretty well for between 1 to 2 months. We've had offers live as long as 8 months, still converting well. So if we're working with a brand new offer, we're not sure how long it's going to live, what its life is going to be. So at least for the first month, what I'm going to do is do a retargeting audience of anyone who opened but didn't convert the lead form. And I'm going to try to serve ads to them to just get them back to the same offer. They were interested enough to look into it, but for some reason didn't pull the trigger.
Yeah.
And if our conversion rates, if our click-through rates look low, and if conversion rates are lower than they were the first round, then I might say, okay, they're interested enough here, but the offer's just not right. And at that point, I might say, let's try a different content offer. But to anyone who... Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's like they've had two bites of a cherry and they still didn't convert. So maybe there's a problem there.
Yes. Yeah. And if I'm still getting, you know, 15%+ conversion rates from the piece of content, then I know there's always going to be people who aren't going to convert, but that's okay. But if I see that conversion rate lower, if it's in the, like, let's say under 12%, then I'm going to really seriously think about that offer. Is it valuable in the first place? And then try something else to that audience, because they're obviously feeling the pain point that we pressed on in the ad copy, but we haven't gotten them to actually convert yet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you have a sort of idea of when you would cut off an offer that, I mean, I guess you've got to spend enough to prove something, because if you don't spend enough to get enough data, then it's like you haven't really proven anything.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, for someone just coming into LinkedIn ads who has never run a LinkedIn ad before, and they've got an idea, they've got an offer that they might be promoting on Facebook, like, what is a reasonable testing budget, I guess is the question.
Oh, yeah. So two questions, two different directions I want to dive down in this one. Testing budget, I would say make sure you're spending at least $5,000 if you're going to be targeting anywhere in North America. As soon as you're targeting a language other than English or countries outside of... basically like North America, UK, Australia, New Zealand, costs will drop significantly. So if you're paying half as much or a third as much for each click, then it also means you can afford to have a lifetime value that's half or a third as much to be just as successful. So that's what I would recommend. It's usually, though, in North America, it's about $5,000 before your conversion rates and your costs per conversion become statistically significant. And I really like that, because if you're working with an agency like ours, it's really helpful to find out with 95% certainty, yes, this looks like it's working, or no, this sucks, we should fire you guys, and save not having to pay another month of management fee along the way.
Yeah.
So starting budget, I'd say $5,000. But if that's too much, if you can't afford that, spend the same $5,000, but just span it over the course of, you know, 2-3 months if you need to. But that's how much data you need to properly analyze.
Right. So you're still building the same data. It's just you're throttling the spends for budget constraints. But exactly. you know what? Like, if your lifetime value is high enough and you are generating the conversions, it's like at some point, then you should be generating the cash flow to then pay for that $5,000. Yeah.
Oh, exactly.
What's like the lowest budget on a campaign that you would spend and expect to get somewhere, you know, without taking 100 years to reach a conversion?
I mean, we once managed an account that was spending $800 a month, and that was, it was for recruiting offers, and, you know, recruiting offers, they seem pretty bottom of the funnel. They're pretty high commitment, but there's also a lot of value in it for the person, like potentially getting a new lucrative career. And so we tend to see high conversion rates. So even though, you know, really low budget, they're still doing great. I would say in North America, don't budget anything less than like $3,000 a month, unless you really have the executive buy-in. What we've found is, you know, you'll tell the executive team, hey, this is a long-term test. We're going to spend this money with LinkedIn over the course of 2-3 months, and we're just going to leave it. And everyone says, oh yeah, totally, we'll be patient. And then inevitably, 15 days in, the exec team is going to come and say, hey, how's it performing?
Yeah.
And you got to be like, whoa, bro, chill. but that's hard to say to an exec. So a lot of times the program gets cut early. So I like to tell people, make sure you come to the table with the full, let's say $5,000 during month one, and prove it out, see if it works. And if not, just cut it. But if it does, great. Go and find more budget for it.
Yeah,
I think you know, like a lot of the companies at this sort of level, like they're probably spending much more than that on like newspaper ads or like some other marketing. Like, So yeah, I guess this maybe isn't like, I guess if you had like a startup idea, is this something that you would consider doing? Because I guess what we're talking about here is like more established businesses where you're confident that the lifetime value is high enough. I guess if you're not confident that the lifetime value is high enough, then maybe you've got to prove that first before you commit the 5K.
Yeah, I think that's really smart to think through. Me personally, I'm very financially conservative. So I would be much more likely to say, hey, even if I know my audience is on LinkedIn, I want to go prove this out first on Facebook and YouTube and Quora and anywhere else where you just get more shots on goal for the same amount of money. And I just want confidence that yes, there are buyers out there. Yes, we can generate leads. Yes, sales knows how to handle these before I really turn on the LinkedIn fire hose. Because we know it's going to cost more, but we also know it's much more premium, and you know the lead quality is going to be higher. But it also means we want to make sure all of our processes are really ironed out and buttoned up before we start spending that kind of money on these leads.
Yeah.
Do your clients do anything like kind of organically with LinkedIn as well? I mean, I get a lot of confused questions when I talk to people about LinkedIn ads, and they kind of. People often think it's the process of like sending out connection requests and like building up a huge following. I mean, is there a role for that in any capacity? I mean, I was wondering like what your clients did for that sort of thing.
Yes, done correctly. I think the organic side of LinkedIn is such a ripe field right now. Mm. I mean, just looking at all the different networks, when you go and post something on Facebook, or Instagram, you might get a couple likes and a comment. On LinkedIn, you go and post something and you get, two times the views as you even have connections and followers. And so organically, it's such a kind network. There's so much value to be had for those who are looking to get the word out to large audiences. So I think it makes a lot of sense. But boy, there are a lot of agencies right now who are basically just mass spamming through connection requests and in mails. And I'm not a fan of that for sure.
let's talk about the in mails. Cause like, I think when I talk to people about, so an in mail is when you send a paid message through the LinkedIn's messaging platform, I guess. I've actually seen some success with it in limited scenarios, but like a lot of clients I speak to are really against doing it for a lot of the reasons that you just alluded to, that it's kind of really annoying. Is it a part of the strategy that you suggest people do, or is it kind of like a niche use case?
So it can be part of the strategy. The way I think of it is sending someone a connection request is kind of like, at a network event, walking up to someone with your hand out, like you want to shake their hand. That's kind of what a connection request is. Mm-hmm. And sending an in-mail is kind of like asking someone on a date. And so if you go directly for asking someone on a date before you've gone up and introduced yourself, it's a little bit jarring. And if you have a really special kind of offer, something that feels very VIP, very tailored for them, then it's appropriate and can work really well. But I mean, in general, I would say send a connection request, which is free for everyone, customize it so they know why you want to connect and that there is value in it for them. And then as soon as you're connected, not only can you see each other's login email addresses, so you can take it offline if you want to, but you can message back and forth unlimited for free. So I think there's a lot more value there than in paying LinkedIn a certain amount. Let's say it's 30 or 80 bucks a month to get 15 in-mails that once someone responds, you send 15 messages out and you wait for people to respond so you get some of those credits back and then can send more emails. I just think it's kind of a fool's errand. Mm.
Can you send emails to retargeting audiences?
You can,
If I've got on your website and suddenly an email pops up.
Yes. This is actually one of the best ways to use it, because we have in-mails like we've been talking about where you send it, one-to-one, but then inside the ad platform, you have what they used to call sponsored in-mail, and now they're called sponsored messaging. But on this one, you have to have an audience size of at least 300 for it to even send. So you're anonymized a little bit, but you can also dynamically insert their first name, their company name, their title. I mean, a whole bunch of other stuff. Mm. So there's a ton of value in these if you have something that people care about. So because of who you are in the industry, we want to give you early access or a sneak peek at something. That feels very VIP. We want to invite you to this, you know, free exclusive networking event where there's going to be dinner and rubbing shoulders with your colleagues and stuff. That feels really good. But outside of that, these ad formats are so expensive. They're like 20 to 60 cents per person you send it to, with no guarantee that they'll see that they got it or open it or click on it. And so the average is something like a $23 to $50 cost per click on them. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather pay 8 to 11 with sponsored content if I don't have, you know, that special of an offer.
And LinkedIn hide how expensive it is as well, doesn't it? Because the number of clicks they report is just people opening the email. It's not people clicking on a link to your website or something.
Yeah, that part really bothers me. I'll have potential clients all the time saying, oh yeah, we run LinkedIn ads and we have a 50% click-through rate. And I'm like, oh, you're running sponsored messaging, aren't you? A 50% open rate is average. It's normal. And so that's nothing special. But if you actually scroll over in the columns and you look for your actual clicks on your offer, and you do the calculation, LinkedIn's not going to offer this up to you. They want to hide it purposefully because it's really high. You'll be like, oh, $25 a click. Maybe that's not worth it. So I wish they would actually call it an open rate and then a click-through rate, but they don't.
Yeah. Gmail's the same. Gmail ads, you're paying for opens, basically.
Really? Yeah. And is it, can you get reporting at least on the clicks, and can you read a cost per click, or
yeah,
they hide it?
Yeah, but they do. If you look at the CTR column, though, that's exactly that. It's the open.
Yeah. Man. We've got like these Google Data Studio dashboards for everything that we do. And it's taken a lot of math on the back end to figure out how to do it. But we've calculated actual click-through rates, actual cost per click on all of our metrics. Accounting for sponsored messaging because they throw all of our numbers off.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the circumstances where I've seen it work. I mean, I've seen people kind of send sponsored emails and then ask people to like contribute to blog posts or contribute ideas or to help with something. I've seen people respond to that sort of thing. I guess it goes back to what you're saying about not just showing up and asking them to like book a free consultation or something really scary.
Anything that strokes their FOMO, their fear of missing out, or their ego, those are going to be great things to do, and you'll have great responses.
Yeah, it's like flattery always helps, isn't it?
Yes. But yeah, and one thing that you should know. Yeah, totally. And one thing you should know about these, each LinkedIn member is only allowed to receive one every 45 days. So they're a little bit rare when you get them. You'll see Sales Navigator in-mails coming in all the time and Recruiter in-mails coming all the time, but you'll only see one of these sponsored message ads every 45 days.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, what is the reason for that limit?
They just don't want to annoy people, and which is really funny coming from the company who allows just any random salesperson to send you an in-mail. Yeah. And you know, important people have just like stacks of in-mail in their box. It's really annoying. But yeah, they have really strict frequency caps just so they don't annoy people. Like sponsored content, you'll usually only see one per day from a company, and you know, if they really push it, you could see two per day.
Yeah. Wow.
Are more people using LinkedIn on desktop, or do people use it on the mobile websites or on an app? I was wondering how the usage kind of breaks down.
Yeah, definitely mostly app. When we run sponsored content ads, we can't target by device, at least not yet. I really hope that's on the roadmap because I'm embarrassed to admit that we can't do that. But when we run that, we'll usually see 70 to 80% mobile usage from those visitors. So yeah, I think we're mostly mobile at this point, but if you use, there's an ad format called text ads. It was the original. And then there's one called dynamic ads. These only show on desktop. And so if you want to know how often your audience is on desktop versus mobile, just bid high enough on your text ads and then just look at the impression numbers every day. And that'll tell you, you know, really how active your audience is.
Wow.
Yeah, it feels like the LinkedIn app has kind of come along quite a long way. But yeah, I mean, you know, for single images and single videos appearing in the newsfeed, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I love
it also explains why a short copy is going to work as well. Because if you're scrolling by on your phone, it's like, and you're in a hurry, you're on LinkedIn because you're trying to do something. It's like, well,
oh yeah, and you add on to the fact that we create all of our ads on desktop. So that's the preview we're looking at. That's what we assume. That's why we keep all of our headlines and our intros short. Mm-hmm. We know if we keep our intro under 130 characters, even on mobile, it won't truncate. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just design for mobile, even though everything looks big and beautiful on desktop.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important point. I mean, even on Facebook, it's like we all create ads on a computer because why would you do it on your phone? And yeah, like almost all of the traffic is mobile.
Yeah. I'm curious, AJ, as far as like the funnel goes, do you find that, and I get that people like opt in for the lead magnet or whatever right away, but do you find then that like what really works is moving them from there to email and then that's where the conversion happens? Or do you find that like direct short funnel, you know, conversions, whether that's to a whatever sales call or a webinar or something, happens like just straight from the click off the platform?
Oh man, Jonathan, I wish I could answer that question with certainty. In my mind, LinkedIn is a really good top to middle of funnel platform, and things like Google Ads and retargeting and email are really good bottom of the funnel. But every time I look in client analytics and I see the channel contribution report, it's just a big tangled web and no one follows the trajectory that you think they would.
For sure.
So in my mind, I don't even want to try. Like attribution is something I don't even want to try to figure out. What I want to do is make it as advantageous for the potential customer as possible. If I can identify who they are on LinkedIn, and then I can surround them with, you know, Google and Facebook retargeting ads, and they can get emails from me, and sales is sending a direct email or like a customized something. Maybe you've got SMS happening. And you know, then you're also retargeting them on LinkedIn because they're a lead that hasn't closed yet. So now you're showing them more bottom of funnel stuff. I don't really care what channel gets the credit at that point. I really just care that they got the experience that walked them all the way through the process.
Yeah. Multi-channel, multi-touch. That's what Maze retargeting is all about.
Yes. Yeah. And you heard it from the guy who runs only one channel.
That's right.
So, you know, you can trust it.
Yeah. Like, do as I say, but not as I do.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it's really important that, you know, if you've got to go on LinkedIn ads, like, do have a follow-up system in place.
Mm-hmm.
So great. I guess I was wondering, like, what are the big mistakes that you see people making?
The two biggest mistakes that I see on pretty much every account I audit. The first is there's this checkbox that LinkedIn automatically checks in every campaign called audience expansion. And oh man, if I could wage a war.
I literally saw that today and I was like, oh man, like I bet everyone leaves that on.
Oh yeah, they do. Because it's there's a perceived generosity when you're on Facebook. Because even if you're a total noob, you go and create your very first ad set. If you go, I don't know what those options mean, and you just kind of take the default, you're not going to screw up. Like, you're going to be fairly happy with the results. You might have some tweaks you can make, but it's a pretty generous platform. On LinkedIn, if you take the defaults all the way down, you'll get screwed. You'll probably pay three times as much per click as you should. And I don't know why LinkedIn's okay with this. I know they care a lot about revenue, but maybe they should look a little bit more at their churn numbers from people who come in, try the platform, and then go, wow, it took all our budget. We got nothing for it. We're going to leave.
They don't have to, because Google's their biggest competitor probably, and it's just as bad on Google. Perry Marshall calls this the stupidity tax. If you just go in there and click the buttons and run it, like, you are going to pay the tax.
It's like drinking,
it's true.
It's like drinking from the fire hose. Just get
exactly. Yeah, so don't do that. Make sure you're always unchecking the audience expansion box. if you're running like an account-based marketing campaign where you're targeting only specific companies, but you left that checkbox on, guess what? You're going to different companies than you selected. So
it's that's like, number one. Here's the exact audience of people I want to reach. Oh, and just throw in some random other people in.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Just whoever you think. And by the way, LinkedIn, here's my wallet. Like, take as much out of it as you think you need. And that kind of leads us into the second mistake we see everyone make is when you go down to the bidding and budgeting section, the default option is auto bidding. Now, auto bidding, for those of you who don't know, it's just CPM bidding that you don't have to babysit as much. Mm. And CPM bidding is also more expensive than CPC bidding 90% of the time. So the default option is overcharging 90% of people. And so the first thing I'll do is switch it to CPC. So I know at least if my ad sucks, I'm not going to pay. LinkedIn may shut it off, but I'm not going to pay anything if I don't get traffic. Yeah. And then LinkedIn will give you this crazy exorbitant range of like, hey, people in your category are paying $28 per click. And you're like, screw that. No, they're not. I'm going to bid lower than the suggested range. People think, oh, LinkedIn says I need to bid competitively. Well, no, you only need to bid enough to spend your entire budget on your target audience. So don't bid high, and then you'll blow your entire budget by like 3 a.m. and you miss the best part of the day. So,
yeah.
You know, when you create a campaign and LinkedIn says, okay, there's like 81,000 people in this audience, click prices are going to be this between this and this, you will generate 30 to 40 leads a day. Is that just nonsense?
I sure think so. I mean, the math behind it sound, but the math is it's taking two things into account that you can't know. So number one, you'll see the same statistics on a brand new account, brand new campaign, brand new ads. So LinkedIn's saying, hey, we think you're going to have about a 0.4% click-through rate. And you're like, you have no idea. Like my ad could be terrible or it could be amazing and way under or overperform that. The other one is that LinkedIn actually does have insight into is if I have an 89,000 person audience, LinkedIn knows how many of those people are active users who are going to come back every day, but I sure don't. So when someone says, hey, I've got this 89,000 person audience, how much do I need to budget? I go, I don't know, like run for a few days, then take a look at it and say, oh, it looks like we're on trajectory to spend about X. So that's what we can spend.
Interesting.
It's funny. I was literally talking to a client earlier today, and like, she was like, "Oh yeah, so like, LinkedIn thinks that we're going to spend this, and we're not this many leads." I was like, "Yeah, there's some serious, some serious LinkedIn optimism salt in there."
It is. Well, and plus, I mean, what are they going to use for their average conversion rate number? It's like people on their network,
50% or so. I don't know.
I mean, they've got people who are running like hard offers that are going to get 1.5 to 4% conversion rates. They've got people who are running great content offers that are 15% plus. And they look at it and go, well, I don't know what kind of ad you're going to run. So I'm going to say you're going to have a 6% conversion rate. And you know, that's, if you've got a 6% conversion rate on content, you're doing real bad. So not super helpful.
So one more question for me. So when you create a campaign, presumably you're creating multiple ad creatives in a single campaign. Like how many ads are you like creating to run at the same time?
Always two. And Facebook seems to have the same issue. So does Google. If I go, ooh, I want to run a big multivariate test, so I'm going to put, you know, 5 or 6 ad creatives in the same campaign or ad set. Inevitably, what's going to happen, one of them is going to get the majority of the impressions, one's going to do okay, and then 3 through 6 or whatever are all going to get like 1 to 10 impressions and then get labeled with such a poor relevancy score that, you know, they've got the red mark of death. Like they will not run no matter how high you bid that campaign.
Yeah.
So what we do is we just say, hey, I'm not going to go through the effort of publishing ads that LinkedIn's never even going to give impressions to. The data would never help us. So I want to run 2 at a time, give all of those variations enough impressions that we get real data from it. Then we'll pause those and sub in our second test. And that seems to be the best way to work it on LinkedIn.
it's felt like an issue to me that like all of these platforms seem to optimize too quickly. Yeah. So okay, this ad had like 7 impressions and didn't get a click yet, so we're just never going to show it. Like,
yes,
great. That's really helpful. Thanks.
Yeah.
Jonathan, any questions?
Yeah. So, well, let's do this. I know you got a podcast. I've looked it up. You got some really fantastic stuff there. For somebody who is like just getting started, maybe they've got a little bit of Facebook ads experience. Almost every marketer does. Yes. What to then plunge into LinkedIn? What do you recommend? You got a guide or a course or anything?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So the LinkedIn Ads Show podcast, okay, it may be a little bit too deep for a brand new marketer, but if you've got any experience in Facebook and or Google, you're probably going to feel right at home. And the level of depth that I go into is the same level of depth I go into when I'm training an employee. So believe me when I say I'm giving the farm away. Like, this is the best content I can possibly come up with. But outside of that, there's the LinkedIn learning course on LinkedIn advertising. I'm the author of that.
Yeah,
you can go check that one out. I mean, that one's $25 if you're not a premium member, or it's free if you are. Really low cost, when the same thing I would come and train your team on would be $500 an hour. So that one's worthwhile. And there's also a checklist that we run all of our new clients through when we onboard them. It's the 8 things that every new advertiser needs. And it can be a really good leg up for you. We published that on b2linked.com/checklist. So feel free, go grab that. That'll give you a leg up as you're starting your account.
That's so awesome.
If you're going to spend $5,000 on LinkedIn ads, then also spend the $25 to actually learn how it works.
Don't worth even think it.
Great. We'll make sure we get links in the show notes to all of those resources. Do you just want to tell us your b2link.com/checklist?
Yes. And if anyone wants to get a hold of us, just go to b2link.com, any page, fill out the form on there, and you won't go to a sales rep and you won't get put on our spammy newsletter or anything like that. You just go directly to my inbox, and I'm not a sales guy. So feel free to reach out, ask anything you want.
Hopefully you'll retarget them though.
I don't as of right now, but that's a real good idea that I should take into account.
There you go. All right.
Great. Well, thanks for coming on, AJ. We'll talk again soon.
Right. Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
If you found this episode helpful, you can continue your education with us through our Maze Insider membership program. As a Maze Insider, you'll get our monthly print newsletter, a monthly members-only webinar, plus unlimited support from myself and Jonathan through our private Google group. Go to mazemarketingpodcast.com/insider and enter the promo code podcast at checkout for a free 1-month trial.